Welcome to the podcast service of the Massachusetts Climate Action Network. Visit us online at massclimateaction.net or friend us on Facebook.
Hi, and welcome to the Climate Minute, your source for insight and perspective on global warming news. My name is Ted McIntyre, and this show is for the week of May 21st, 2015. Today we're joined by our frequent guest, our co-host, the prolific commentator, Mr. D.R. Tucker. How are you doing tonight, D.R.?
Good. How are you doing?
Great, great. So, D.R., this, in the world of the philosophy, shall we say, or the analysis of climate issues, there are two big players. Of course, there are many, but there are two big players, at least in the universe that I look at. One is a guy named Dave Roberts, who used to be, until a few weeks ago, in fact, at the website grist.org, and he's recently moved to a place called vox.com. Mm-hmm. And he is actually really an interesting writer, very creative, lots of new ideas. And another guy who is a great analyst, shall we say, of just the goings-on in the climate world is a guy named Joe Rome, who's a physicist who runs Think Progress, one subset of which is Think Progress Climate, right?
Mm-hmm.
So this past week, Dave Roberts at Vox.com put up a post basically saying, he went through a bunch of stuff, basically saying, man, nobody wants to tell the truth about just how bad climate is and is mm-hmm. going to be. Right, D.R.? Can you take us through what Dave Roberts said in his post?
Yes, it was a post entitled The Awful Truth About Climate Change No One Wants to Admit, in which David Roberts said that, you know, the obvious truth about global warming is this: barring miracles, humanity is in for some awful shit. And basically the theme of the piece is that, you know, there's a lot of talk about trying to keep the world temperatures down under 2 degrees Celsius, because that's the widely agreed upon target to avoid the worst death. But in order to do so, it would, as David Roberts writes, quote, require an utterly unprecedented level of global mobilization and coordination sustained over decades. There's no sign of that happening or reason to think it's plausible anytime soon. And so awful shit it is, unquote. He then went on to discuss controversies surrounding an analyst at the German Institute for International Security Affairs named Oliver Geddon, who claimed, according to Roberts, quote, politicians, he says, want good news. They want to hear it's still possible to limit temperature to 2 degrees Celsius. Even more, they want to hear that they can do so while avoiding aggressive emission cuts in the near term, say until they're out of office. They feel pressure to provide the good news, and they're worried that if they don't, they'll come across as alarmist or hectoring. And so they allegedly construct models showing that it's possible to hit the 2 degrees Celsius target, unquote.
So what he's saying is the scientists go easy on the predictions because they don't want to be sound too much like a Cassandra and get left out of the conversation by being the crazy guy with a poster board walking around saying the end is near, right?
Mm-hmm. And that's what caused the controversy specifically with Joe Rome, who pointed out, number one, that in fact climate scientists have not toned down their predictions of what is to come. And number two, it is false and a smear to suggest that to imply that they're somehow massaging data in order to avoid political heat. Because if they really wanted to avoid political heat, they would just run around and call it a hoax too. But obviously they're not. It just suggested that somehow climate scientists are being cowards and are toning things down.
Well, the way I read it was that it's not so much they're toning things down, but they're mm-hmm. trying to make the message palatable. Because they know mm-hmm. how devastating the message can be. I mean, it sounds like a hopeless message to say that, you know, doing what we're doing now is going to condemn our grandchildren to terrible stuff, right? I mean, that's not a great message. So they keep trying to find a way to make it plausible that we can take action, right?
Well, the way I read it was that the implication from Geddon was that the scientists were trying to tone things down, because there was a follow-up post by Roberts entitled "The News on Climate is Awful, So Now What?" in which he talked about the controversy, the continued controversy surrounding what Geddon said, and David Roberts writes, quote, "Neither I nor Oliver Geddon accuse scientists of faking anything. Climate modelers don't have to make up anything or lie about anything to make 2-degree scenario work. 2-degree scenarios work. They just have to tweak various assumptions about when global emissions will peak, how fast they will fall, and what kinds of clean or negative emissions energy will be commercially available. There's nothing nefarious about that. Those are all contestable assumptions within a wide range of plausible inputs," unquote. But as I read it, again, it seemed as if Geddon was implying that the climate science community knows that things are worse than they'd like to let on and are therefore toning things down. And that implication is offensive to Rome and to a lot of people, as you've seen on Twitter, Brad Johnson of Hillheat.com, principally among them, because you're essentially accusing climate scientists of the same thing that the climate deniers accused them of during ClimateGate, which is a massaging of data in order to achieve a political outcome. This is why it's so controversial, and this is why I'm with Rome, that it's absolutely wrong for Geddon to imply any sort of massaging or toning down or soft peddling of data.
Or choices in modeling. But it's certainly, I mean, everyone has heard the phrase that, you know, garbage in, garbage out. I mean, your model is only as good as your assumptions. And I think there's a lot of pressure on climate scientists to make assumptions in their models, because that's all what it's based on. No one knows what emissions are going to be in 20 years, right? So they do this range of models of possible scenarios for future emissions. And then if I was a climate modeler, I would be trying to find a way to get to a solution. And if that, I guess what Roberts was saying was that many, now again, this is, I have not looked at this independently, but that Roberts was saying that some of the models include negative carbon emissions. That is to say that in order to maintain the idea that we can stay below 2 degrees centigrade, that we must somehow take carbon dioxide out of the atmosphere. And one of the arguments there is sort of organic farming, and there's a way to sequester carbon back into the soil. And he's saying basically that's not a realistic scenario, so why are you even assuming it? But it does allow you to say, gee, if we have enough of this carbon capture, then we can still stay within the 2-degree limit by the end of the century if we roll out this technical solution.
Now there is a point that I think that David Roberts in particular is pointing to, where I think in this instance David Roberts is right, where he's suggesting that if there isn't the sufficient leadership worldwide, and particularly in the United States, then you will hit 4 degrees Celsius. And in fact, Joe Rome, in his piece responding to David Roberts' initial piece, he does say that, you know, that if we do get off our asses and have the mobilization that is necessary, we will be able to avoid the worst. Of course, the converse of that is that if we don't get off our asses, we will experience the worst. So you see how where in my view, Rome is absolutely right to point out the flaws of what Geddon is saying or implying, but also Roberts is absolutely right to say that if there is not a sufficient mobilization, you will have the worst coming towards us.
I guess the question that comes back, and it's one that's fairly old, is what responsibility the quote unquote scientists have to educate people and say, you know, awful truths, as opposed to the responsibility of the leaders to recognize the situation and the facts that are presented to them and take action. I mean, I think it's unfair to put the responsibility on the climate scientists for not being dire enough. And of course, Joe Rome makes the point that they have been fairly blunt about what's going to happen. But it's this kind of a philosophical question that goes back and forth. I mean, like, oh, the climate scientists aren't being forthcoming enough, and so we all get to blame them, when in fact it is the politicians who regularly hide from the fact. Some politicians that we know and love seem to be hiding from the fact, but that's a whole other story, right? Who do you think has the responsibility here?
Well, it goes back to that piece that Bill McKibben wrote, I think, in February of 2014, in which he basically said that it would be, in which he basically said that the climate science community, you know, they would be more well within their rights to retire because they've given so many of these warnings and so and pointed to so much evidence, and it seems to be consistently ignored by the political media culture that you can't blame them for in essence wanting to go on strike. Mm-hmm. And you're right that, you know, you can't hold climate scientists responsible for people not being responsive to what they are saying for ideological or political or whatever sort of purpose they choose to reject what the science is. At some point, it is on policymakers and for the larger culture to act, that the climate scientists have done their job and they've done all that they can do and they've done an exemplary job. But now it's up to the rest of us to act based on the evidence they've presented to us.
So tell me, Dia, what's your take on this face-off, an intellectual face-off between Dave Roberts and Joe Rahm? Is one right, the other's wrong, or vice versa? Are they both right? Are they both wrong? What do you think?
I think there are things that where again, Rome is absolutely right to point out that, you know, if you're going to, as Geddon by implication does, challenge the integrity of the climate scientist community, you'd better back it up. And Geddon does not back it up. But I think Roberts is right when he points to, you know, the level of mobilization it would require to avoid the worst and to raise the question of whether we can have that level of mobilization. Rome has pointed out that you are seeing signs of a mobilization, but then that gets to the issue of whether that mobilization is enough. And this ties into a discussion that I've had with people in the week since the announcement of Obama, you know, greenlighting drilling for Shell. Mm-hmm. And the argument I make is saying that, you know, if there was enough of the American people demanding that all that oil be kept in the ground, Obama would have responded to it, and that in the absence of a demand from the American public, the powers that be, namely Shell, will get its way. That the only thing to stop the powers that be from getting their way is for the American public to say no. The same sort of mobilization that has caused a delay in the Keystone Pipeline matter, the same sort of mobilization that in New York stopped fracking, that's what you need to stop Shell from doing what it's doing, and that's what you need to avoid 4 degrees Celsius. So in that instance, Roberts is right that it will take a massive, massive, massive national and international mobilization to avoid the worst. Right. So it was a fascinating discussion, but from my perspective, you know, there are no enemies involved.
Right.
There's nobody who's 100% right and 100% wrong.
And no knockout punches at an intellectual level.
You just see two brilliant guys who both have points that are beyond the threshold of dispute or refutation.
Right. Yeah, and I guess we should close by pointing out to people that if you don't follow these guys, it's a good thing to do. I mean, because they typically, both of them, come up with interesting perspectives on stuff you wouldn't have thought about. They've read stuff that you're probably not going to read, right? And so after a while, you get a sense of how they read things, right? And you can form your own opinions. But it's always interesting. I'm grateful that we have people like this to even think about it. I was mentioning before, DR, how last fall, after the People's Climate March, there was a lot of discussion about how there really and truly was a climate movement. And there was an article, I think by Wen Stevenson, but I'd have to go back and look, basically saying that when you have a big, brawling, vital climate movement, it's okay to have a knockdown, drag out brawl over some point, right? A dust up over some point of philosophy, because that's good. I mean, that educates everyone, makes everyone think about things. And I think this is an interesting case of two very smart guys duking it out and both having good points to make, right?
Exactly.
Well, DR, we'll have to leave that there. Thank God no one looked at me to write a response to either of those two guys, because I would have been dead in the water. So, We will put up links to those various articles on the blog that's associated with this podcast. Of course, the blog is a WordPress blog, massclimateaction.wordpress.com. You can leave a comment there. You can send us a comment to the address comment@massclimateaction.net. Please let us know what you think. You can find us on Facebook @MassClimateAction. You can share our page. You can like us. That's a good thing. Please let your friends know about us. You can listen to us directly on your smartphone using Stitcher. And if you do listen to us on Stitcher, please review us and make a comment. That'll pushes us up on the famous Stitcher list, which is what produces airtime, produces visibility on their site. Of course, you can find us on iTunes by searching for Massachusetts Climate Action, and please subscribe to us there. There's lots and lots of ways you can get through to us. So we'll close the way we always close, by saying that because we recognize the necessity of personal accountability for our actions, because we accept responsibility for building a durable future, and because we believe it is our patriotic duty as citizens to speak out, we must insist that the United States of America put a dollar price on carbon pollution. Thanks for being here, DR.
Thanks.
And thanks to everyone for listening. Goodbye. We'll talk to you all again next week. Bye-bye.
Thanks for being with us. And until next time, be green.
Very cool.